Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
Aimed in towards Archer! That's a fabulous header!
Once again, the target's banished the flick on. Magnificent from Danny Ings.
He's going to have to go on his own here. He's perfectly happy to do that! Sensational goal!
Ramsey!
That's a big clap, mate. So.
Gather Round Villains and welcome back to Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. It's back on as Emery's men put their away day woes behind them to put us firmly back in the European race. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me once again, it's Craig. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, Andy. Hi, listener. Yeah, what a beautiful time. What a beautiful win at the weekend. 2-1 against Tottenham. First time we've done a double over them apparently since 1996. And first time we've beaten them at home in 15 years. So absolutely wonderful, and we are marching on.
Yeah, it was a really good, really positive kind of atmosphere, certainly before the game. I just wanted to ask you about the how it looked on the telly. Did you catch a glimpse of the whole 10 streamers at the start of the game?
The whole 10 streakers, Andy? No, we didn't see them. The streamers. No, I didn't see the streamers, but the volume, I think, in the first half was good and decent atmosphere. But I think when that second goal went in, and I think the nerves were calmed, Villa Park was really rocking. It reminded me a little bit, actually, of the best Villa atmosphere I ever experienced. I think was the Atletico Madrid tie, where Colin Moore belted that one into the top corner. It wasn't quite that, but it was. It was kind of goosebump stuff, and that's just coming through the television. Obviously, I've also seen lots of videos that people have taken on socials, which gives a kind of view from the stands, as it were. But Andy, you were there in person, live in the living colour. The vibrations would have been moving through your body. How did it feel on Saturday afternoon?
It was all positive, kind of leading up to the game. I think then, you know, at the start of the game, I think the streamers kind of helped. They handed out streamers certainly in the upper hole for people to kind of throw and make a bit of a spectacle, and I think it added to the atmosphere and how it looked. It certainly looked good on the telly from what I could see, sort of watching it back. And it was noisy. I think after the first goal, it sort of settled down, and it was almost like expectation now. You know, we're just waiting for the next goal and the next goal. And it was interesting that we were playing, you know, Tottenham and kind of expecting to kind of take them to the cleaners, really. So it went a bit quiet, but then, like you say, second half, and when the second goal went in, it really picked up, and it was similar to the promotion run, that kind of expectant atmosphere and lots of singing and chanting and stuff like that. It was really good. And it's sort of earned that kind of response when they play like that. But we'll get into it. First of all, the team selection, Leon Bailey in for Traore. No Coutinho again, who was apparently out injured, and Matty Cash returned to the bench. Any surprises in the team? I kind of expected Boubacar Kamara perhaps to start this one. And do you think we've seen the last of Felipe Coutinho, Craig?
I think we may have, yeah. I don't... it's really difficult because you can... I think he just, before he got injured, he just had started, I think, two games in a row. He scored the goal against Arsenal. And there were just kind of, to quote my old mate Steve Bruce, there were the old green shoots there of recovery from Coutinho. And obviously we know he's probably the most talented player at the football club. But the question is, does he have the legs? Does he have the physicality and to do it anymore and do it at the highest level of the Premier League, which is obviously really unforgiving? And unfortunately for Philippe Coutinho, just as he was getting into hopefully some kind of rhythm under Unai Emery, he's been out for a long time now, two or three months with an injury. And just as he returned to the bench last week, he's broken down again. So you don't want to write anyone off. But what I will say is there's two factors really to consider. The first factor is, can his body at this point in his career, at the wrong side of 30, withstand the rigors of week-to-week Premier League action and hopefully European action as well? And you would have to say the evidence that we have would say no. And the second thing is, from a kind of spreadsheet aspect, he is allegedly Villa's top paid player, him and Lucas Digne are supposed to be kind of neck and neck. And are we in a position financially as a football club where we can, and I know this isn't sexy to talk about, you know, but are we in a position where we can have two of our biggest paid players in Digne and Coutinho really not troubling the first team squad for one reason or another? And I think the answer also to that question is no. So based on that, I think that the fat lady hasn't sung on Coutinho, but she's certainly clearing her throat, Andy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'd be very surprised if we see him, certainly if we see him start another game. Obviously, we don't know how bad the injury is that kept him out on Saturday. It might just be a little knock that, and they just decided to not to risk him. But two games to go now. I can't really see him troubling that first team. And really, with everyone back on the bench, there's no real need for him to be on the bench either. So, it's a shame, isn't it? Because, you know, we had such high hopes. Maybe it's one that we shouldn't have, in hindsight, we shouldn't have done the permanent deal, just left it at the loan deal and moved on. But it's just been not a terrible signing, because I'm sure he's been good for the squad. And I think both sides of that argument, both Coutinho and the club, just need to probably part ways at the end of the season and do whatever they can to get him a decent move somewhere where he can flourish, you know, at a different level to the hustle and bustle of the Premier League.
Yeah, it is really a far cry from, I mean, we're all just so excited. It was really a pinch yourself kind of moment when Coutinho comes through the door, and that first appearance off the bench for Man United, where he scored one, set up one, and he had that little purple patch there, and then the form kind of trailed off, and this season was just a bad, bad struggle. His first goal was that beautiful team move against Arsenal, and that was just again when he started to begin to look like himself. And then we really haven't seen him much at all since. So again, it's Emery is reaching, maybe not, he's not quite a god yet, but he's at least some kind of mercurial wizard type figure or some kind of all-knowing sorcerer. If he cannot get this guy into gear and get him fit and get him ready, then it is probably time to say goodbye. But you also know there's such an incredible player in there, and you don't want to give up, but you might not have a choice if his body can't handle it, which again the suggestions are that it can't based on the evidence that we're looking at. You just have to sometimes, as I say, you know, say thank you and farewell.
Yeah, you mentioned that goal. I have voted for that goal in the goal of the season poll, which is on the website at the moment. Just seemed like the best of the ones that they had. I would have voted for Douglas Luiz against Tottenham in the away game, but that wasn't listed, which surprised me. But I went for Coutinho against Arsenal, and it was, you know, superb team goal, and he finished it really well, but unfortunately then picked up the injury and we haven't seen him since. So, but it has coincided with our best run since the promotion campaign. So it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it? here was another fast start for Villa. Seems to be a bit of a trademark of Emery's team. Whichever way they kick Craig, whether it's towards the Holt end or the North Stand, in this case it was the latter. Lovely move again involving Ollie Watkins, who looked like he was fouled actually, but they played on. Jacob Ramsey and Bailey, excellent bit of wing play to beat the defender, and a low cross which found Ramsey making the late run into the box. You know, great finish into the corner. Another explosive start. Ramsey and Bailey often seem to be involved in these starts, don't they? And quietly, Ramsey has amassed 5 goals and 5 assists this season. And whilst, you know, there are clearly areas where he could improve, these numbers just seem to show his worth to the team, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really tricky because you're thinking one thing, and then sometimes you get a different kind of idea. And I did say last week that we all, and I include myself in that, sometimes forget just how young this guy is. This is a kid. This is a guy who's 4, 5, 6 years potentially away from being at his peak. But those kind of numbers now cannot be denied. These are numbers that even our old friend Jack Grealish was not producing at this age in the Premier League. Part of which because we got, you know, relegated, I think, around the time he was this age. But still, you know, at this kind of age, Jack Grealish was not producing these kind of numbers. Jack Grealish scarcely produced these kind of numbers when he was fully grown and back into the Premier League. I don't think he had any more goals and assists than this in any season. So you have to be impressed with it. And you have to also kind of take a step back and think to yourself, well, if he's doing this now, what could he become in 2, 3, 4 years? And that is, I guess, the exciting bit. And Steven Gerrard, to his credit, first mentioned for old Stevie G this podcast, he was very vocal about Jacob Ramsey, and he was very vocal in talking about Jacob Ramsey being a future England international and Ramsey having all of those skills in his locker. And it's weird because I don't know how you feel about it, Andy. It doesn't feel like he's been incredible this season. It feels like there's been a lot of up and down. Like, I don't think Jacob Ramsey's been really in the conversation for player of the year, but with those numbers, you think he kind of should be. So it's a weird one. Do we take him for granted a little bit, Andy? What's your position?
Well, I think he's, in terms of the pool of talent we have to pick from for Player of the Year this year, it's massively increased, hasn't it? It was pretty much between him and Matt Cash last season, and Matt Cash won Player of the Year. This year, there's been a lot of, you know, significant performers, hasn't there, in the Villa side. The standards has increased massively. And I think Ramsey has been a bit up and down, but bear in mind, like you say, he's incredibly young still. He's about 20, is he? Is he still 20? And he's playing every week. He's in the team every week. He very rarely misses a start, does he? So, you know, that's an awful lot as well, an awful lot of burden to take on. And he's also moved positions, hasn't he, really? He's playing a different role, so he's learning all the time. He's absorbing all this information. But I just think his abilities are more in those type of scenarios when the ball moves really quick and the play moves very, very fast up the field in the transition. And he's either getting on the end of something or carrying the ball. He's instrumental in those moments. And we've used the word explosive, haven't we, to describe him in the past. And I think that's exactly it. It's his skill and his pace and his finishing ability, which sets him apart from other players. It's how you kind of sort of fit him into the team, really. And how you coach him to be better at the other side of the game. But I think he's improving all the time. And, you know, last year we saw the the you know, the shoot, the green shoots, I suppose, and we saw the player he could be in flashes. But this year, I think we've seen a more rounded player and a more intelligent player. And yeah, it's, I think he's, he could, I mean, I think he could play for England. I absolutely think he could play for England in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, if Maitland-Niles can play for England, I'm sure that he can as well. Yeah. So what do you think? You say he could play for England. What's the ceiling for this guy? I mean, if we're talking about 5 assists, 5 goals in the Premier League now, that is not something that, that Villa wide players achieve regularly. This is also, I saw a stat saying, you know, he's kind of one of the elites in terms of players under 23 in Europe's top 5 leagues. You know, he's in some real, in terms of players who have produced 10 goal creating actions this season. He's kind of swimming in rarefied waters, you know, with the likes of Saka and Martinelli and people like that. What is the ceiling? How much more is there, do you think?
I think plenty more. I think he'll improve over the next 2 or 3 years. And so long as Villa continue on their trajectory, then maybe he can play in the Champions League for Villa. Maybe that's his, what he's aiming for. He can certainly play for England and be in that squad and be an option for Southgate. It's just whether he can maintain certain levels, go on to another level as well, and fend off any competition from whoever Emery decides to bring in.
Last question on Ramsey. Just because I'm curious. Our last academy prospect went for £100 million. Gibbs White went for £40 million last summer. If, just hypothetically, I'm not saying we're going to sell him. Obviously, I don't think we're selling him. But what do you think his value is? If Villa were to sell him in July, what do you think he would go for? And no, I'm not saying I want to sell him. No, I'm not saying he's leaving. I'm just curious. I'm just interested in what the value is.
I think with his the way he's playing, the way he's performed over the last couple of years in the Premier League, he's now a top 8 midfielder, isn't he, at the moment? So, I mean, I still think there's question marks in some areas, but I think you'd be looking for 35 plus at the very least, £35 million plus. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Gibbs White is kind of the comparable one who's doing similar kind of stuff at a similar kind of age. So yeah, I would say the £40 million. I'd say four, and also he's English, so there's always a bit of a premium there. I think you wouldn't take any less than £40 million for him at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
And, but we don't want to sell him, so it doesn't matter.
We don't. We definitely don't want to sell him. We want to keep him involved, and hopefully he'll be a big part of the plans next season as well. And of course, we've got his younger brother to come back and see what he's got as well over the next couple of years.
So. In terms of his age, by the way, Andy, he's 21 now, but he turns 22 on May 28th, whereas Aaron Ramsey is 20, and he doesn't turn 21 until next January.
Yeah, it's exciting though, isn't it, to have those two in particular there in the squad, and who knows what kind of a mark Aaron Ramsey could make in the Villa side. But it was, I mean, it incredibly controlled performance, particularly in the first half. Villa creating chance after chance. Spurs just looked like they just had no answer to Villa sort of piling forward. They were very, very lucky to go in only one down. I just wanted to touch on the thing that seems to have come out of the game more so than anything Villa did well or in the attacking sense, at least, is the high line, the high defensive line that we've been playing now for a good few months, really. I don't know if you were aware of it, but it was critiqued on Match of the Day on Saturday night by Ian Wright as being quite a dangerous game to be playing, a bit of a tightrope. He suggested that he would love to play against such a defensive strategy. And Spurs were caught offside, I think, 9 times in the match. And overall, Villa's opponents since Emery came in have been offside over 90 times, which is around 30 more than any other team. Ashley Young also discussed the hard work and the training and the effort that goes into that in training every week, every day. It does seem on the face of it like a risky strategy. However, the numbers sort of suggest it's working very well. But it's not really the first time Emery's tactics have been kind of critiqued unfairly. So what do you think the experts in this case are missing, and or are they right? Is this doomed to fail?
Well, Ian Wright is, and this isn't my idea. So other people have pointed this out. He played for George Graham. And the famous chant back then for our older listeners was 1-0 to the Arsenal, because Winterburn, Bold, Dixon and Tony Adams would play an incredibly high line and they would catch people offside because they were the best drilled defensive unit in the league. We've now caught teams offside since Emery has been in charge 96 times. It's in the high 90s, which I think is 20 or 30 more than the next nearest challenger. So it is an effective tactic. It's not new. Liverpool have been known to play with a high line. Now that Van Dijk has lost some of his athleticism, I think they've calmed that down a little bit. But Liverpool won championships and Champions Leagues playing an incredibly high line. So this is not anything new. It's just new for Aston Villa. And I think that Ian Wright and some of the national, and this has bubbled up already for Aston Villa. We're seeing people who don't watch Villa week in and week out. They're pressed for an opinion, and that's their job, obviously, when they're on a panel show or on a podcast or whatever, and they give an opinion, and the Villa fans get upset about it, and that's fine because we digest and we invest and we consume so much more Aston Villa content. We consume the interviews with the managers and the players. We consume the highlights of Aston Villa. We go to the games. We watch the games live where we can. So we watch everything Aston Villa, and we know a lot more than someone who is just, you know, catching 10 minutes of each game here or there and then is forced to give an opinion on that in their role. So I think that this isn't new. Is there risk? Yes, of course there's risk. But, you know, no. To quote old Del Boy, he who dares wins. The point is, this system presses the whole game, and it means that teams cannot play around you with their tippy-tapper stuff and tap one into your goal because you have a high line. Mings is fast, Cons is fast, Martinez is fast off his line to play as a bit of a sweeper keeper. And let's not forget that this high line has produced Aston Villa's best series of results in the Premier League since 2009-2010. So we have to enjoy it, accept it, and understand that, yes, it is a risk. We saw what the risks are against Man United. One mistake with the high line, Rashford gets through. Bang, Fernandes gets the rebound. It's 1-0. We didn't make that mistake the other day. The Harry Kane chance was there's questions about whether that was offside or not, but that wasn't a super high line. That was quite far back anyway. So, yeah, occasionally a striker like Rashford or Salah, as we'll talk about, I'm sure, later on, might break the offside trap, but it is working 99 turns out of 100, and this system is responsible for Aston Villa's incredible run. So let's, you know, go with it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the main thing to say is that it's not simply the high line, is it? It's about the control in the midfield. You know, the high line, it can only exist because of the way we're controlling the game in the midfield, both in terms of our passing and retention of the ball and winning the ball back in good areas, which happened multiple times on Saturday. We took the ball off Tottenham players in their half of the field. So that's when the high line can exist and like you say, pushes the whole play forward, compacts the field, doesn't it? And it's actually very, very difficult to break the lines with the three ball like that. It's not something that's easy. And it's quite often when Villa do turn the ball over to the opposition, it's then they have to do something quick and they have to try and get the ball over or get the ball, you know, through the lines. with a pass, and it's not an easy thing to do. It's not something that you know is just straightforward as it looks really. And that's when obviously the offside comes in, or just misplaced passes and balls over the top that don't find their targets. So it's actually done well, which Villa are doing. It's a pretty solid strategy, and I really like it. I absolutely love seeing how we dominate the ball, in the opposition half of the field for large parts of the game. It's incredibly good to watch, considering that for so long, for so many years, we've been on the team on the other end of that, Craig.
Yeah, we have, and we've been the ones chasing shadows. We've been the one up against teams who were better coached than us because they had better coaches. Sometimes they had better players. We've been really frustrated many, many times, particularly in the Championship, by being beaten by teams who had far inferior budgets, far inferior playing squad, but were just coached better than we were, particularly under Mr. Steve Bruce. How many times do we talk about that over the years? I mean, I wasn't on the show then, but if I was, I can tell you that's what I was talking about. The Brentford would be a great example where they just led us a merry dance every time we went to face them, and Bruce's organisation or lack thereof just couldn't live with any kind of those kind of structures and those kind of patterns of play. And now we're the ones who are overachieving. We're the ones that get to go to White Hart Lane or the Tottenham Stadium and win. We get to go to Stamford Bridge and win. We get to wrestle and really do a number on Arsenal with that goal of the season goal that we talk about, that you voted for from Coutinho, that we've already mentioned, where the best defence in the league at that point, we just passed them to death. And then the best defence in the league at the point where they visited last month was Newcastle United, and we absolutely kill them. We kill them with those intricate passing movements. We score three goals. And that is just really unusual for us as Aston Villa fans. And I think it's unusual for, going back to your earlier point, it's unusual for the pundits. And I'm not sure anyone quite knows what to make of Aston Villa right now. And that's a good thing, because we're changing opinions, we're changing attitudes, and we're actually carving a new path for ourselves. And people now, finally, both in Villa Park and outside, have to take Aston Villa seriously, because we are a serious team with serious owners. And for once, now, finally, a really serious top-level manager.
Yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it? Every you know, whenever a club now, top club anyway, loses their manager, sacks their manager, Unai Emery is going to be in the frame, isn't he? You know, you're already hearing people linking him to trying to link him to Spurs. Obviously,
la 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 la. That was me sticking my ears in my fingers in my ears and ignoring. But yeah, you're right, Andy. Yeah,
yeah, because it's Aston Villa, and you can go and take Aston Villa's manager, can't you? So you know, hopefully this is the start of that changing, and maybe we can he can achieve with Villa what he wants to achieve, and has no reason to go anywhere. So so that would be nice, but it is interesting listening to national media, national football podcasts, things like that, and they don't really know. They haven't really got a clue as to why Aston Villa. I heard someone say on one that, you know, the reason they're so good is because Emery's just tightened up the defence. And I thought, it's a lot more than that. Watch a game from last season and watch a game from this season and tell me if you think it's just a better defence. It's so much more than that. Although the defence is better as well. But another player that's improved, Craig, is of course Douglas Luiz, and we talk about him quite a lot. We talked about him last week in terms of Player of the Year, and just as Spurs had started to get into the game, really in the second half, Villa got forward, and Watkins did well, won a free kick about 25 yards out. I was saying to someone only last week that we have no one in the team that can strike a ball and score from a free kick, really, or that you'd back to do it with any great regularity. So I almost thought I might not bother watching this. the game, but I'm glad I did because it was an excellent shot from Douglas Luiz, who lined it up and Fraser Forster could only parry it into the roof of the net. I mean, it was another huge impact from Luiz on the day. But also McGinn and Ramsey, as we said, controlled that midfield throughout. McGinn in particular was exceptional. Just running, just like a bulldozer through the Spurs midfield. It was a throwback to the championship season, I thought, on Saturday. It's easy to forget, though, that these three were being kind of swamped every week under Steven Gerrard, and we've talked about them playing fullback and covering at fullback and such like. And that was only a few months ago, Craig.
You know what? It's McGinn. I mean, we're talking about Luiz as well, but McGinn, just to follow up on your point there, he was remarkable. They couldn't get near him. They could not get near him. Not one of those midfielders could get anywhere near John McGinn. He was head and shoulders. And I think Harry Kane was actually playing in midfield for a portion of that first half. He certainly was dropping deep with Son and Richarlison ahead of him. And there was a number of times where McGinn embarrassed the England captain. Now, Harry Kane is not necessarily the most dynamic of movers. Wonderful player though he is. But McGinn absolutely embarrassed him. Oliver Skip looked like a League Two player next to him. And even Holberg, or Hjalberg, however you pronounce it, who's a player I'm genuinely impressed with, just couldn't get, was just wound up, fouling. And John McGinn was absolutely sensational. Sensational. He was killing them. And then I think the referee did his best to kind of clip his wings a little bit with that ridiculous yellow card. But it made no difference whatsoever. McGinn absolutely ran the show. And yeah, and his midfield partner, Douglas Luiz, smashes in the winner. I tweeted that Fraser Forster reminded me of Brad Guzan. Brad Guzan always seemed to do that. Whenever we conceded the goal from a free kick, he'd get a hand to it and palm it into our net. So it was nice to be on the beneficiary end of that particular outcome there. Fraser Forster just couldn't get across. I think he thought he was going the other way, and it's a beautiful free kick from Douglas Luiz. And yeah, that's our second one, isn't it, Andy, after Luka Dean scored against Man United. All of a sudden, I think didn't we go 10 years or something without scoring one? Now, like London buses, two have come along in the same season, so good for us. And maybe if we sign James Ward-Prowse now, we can bang in a few more.
Well, yeah, maybe, you never know. I'm not sure he's good enough for us now, but yeah, I think I was reminiscing about Conor Hourihan, and it was the anniversary of that goal he scored against West Brom last week. And I mean, incredible hit, and we haven't got a player that can strike a ball like that. There's just no one, and he was so good at that, either a dead ball or from open play. Just such a good striker of the ball, and we haven't got anyone who can do that really. Douglas Luiz would be one that where you'd say when he first came in, he pinged a couple into the top corner, and I thought, we've got a player here that can, you know, that can pick his spot. But it's not really been that way for him ever since. So this was excellent. This was really good, really positive to see. We've seen him do it from a corner direct, but not from a direct free kick. So it was lovely, and it really kind of put the seal on the game, really. But you know, just back to that point about the midfield, how, you know, it's just night and day, isn't it, from how it was. Same players, pretty much, obviously slightly different system, but just on top of the game, passing it really well, winning it back, dominating the midfield.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you know, Andy, you said last week you'd have been happy to sell him to Arsenal, but I have to say that now he's back in his pomp. We're loving life, man. We're loving life, and I'm really pleased with all three of them: Luiz, Ramsey, and McGinn. As you mentioned, I never thought Ramsey was a number eight or a central midfielder. I always felt he needed to be further forward or on the wing, and I think that's turned out to be true. But what I was completely wrong about was I didn't think that McGinn and Douglas Luiz could be a midfield pair in the centre, and Unai Emery's made a mockery of me. A mockery, I say. because they are together. They've been really, really good, and they've mitigated the loss of Kamara, and we haven't really missed a beat apart from those two disappointing results. You know, that's two disappointing results out of about 15. So it's really not too shabby in terms of McGinn and Louise in particular. So long may it continue. And obviously, we'll make transfers. We'll be bringing players in. So there's going to be additional strength and depth for that position as well, and more competition. There is a slight fear, Andy, dare I say, that Douglas Luiz's new contract, did it include a release clause? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's enjoy it while we're enjoying it. That's a problem for tomorrow, eh?
Yeah, I mean, his comments after the game was about how much he loves playing at Villa Park, and he certainly looked happy enough after the goal and all that sort of thing. He does seem like he's in his element. And I just think if we get European football at whatever level, it will be enough to keep one or two of these players around. Of course, there was talk last week about Emi Martinez, which was well timed just before the Spurs game, because that was the club, one of the clubs he was linked with. But we'll just have to see, won't we? The thing I'm confident in now is that it's more about the system and the style of play, and players can come in and be in that system and learn that system and play it effectively. It doesn't really matter.
And you see that with.
About the name,
you see that with Brighton, and Brighton with mm-hmm. their you just can't believe the players that Brighton lose and continue to improve. It's bonkers. From Ben White for 50 million, Bissouma's obviously gone out the door. They've lost Trossard, and there's a couple more that I'm thinking of off the top of my head. But they just keep improving because the system is there, the scouting is there. So it almost doesn't matter. And we've seen a kind of taste of that, a glimpse of that with all those players we lost. Let's not forget, we lost four starters or four players that were starting anyway in Philip Coutinho, Matt Cash, Boubacar Kamara and Leon Bailey. We lost all four of them. And for the most part, it's made no difference to the results whatsoever. They just kept marching on. No Kamara, no problem. We'll put McGinn in there. We'll move McGinn out. No Bailey. We'll move McGinn out wide and stick Dendonka in the middle. And the wins just kept on coming. So hopefully, dare I say, Andy, we're moving towards a place where we don't need to necessarily jump in the nearest canal every time we lose a big player, because we can kind of regenerate and go again.
And I actually think that's going to be the name of the game under Emery, because I think in some ways, his methods might have a bit of a shelf life with certain players, and it'll be all good for a while, but he will be attuned to recognising once when their heads have gone, when they're not really up for it anymore. And then it's up to the club to make sure that those players are moved on. And whoever it is, it doesn't matter, because you need everyone to be buying in. And if players aren't buying in, then you move them along, whoever they are, however big a name they are, you know, you get the money in and you get a replacement, and then that way you regenerate and you keep the thing moving forward. It's when you hold on to players for too long and they're not up for it anymore, which is, you know, the problem that Pochettino had at Spurs, aging players, aging team, and they weren't willing to do the running anymore, so it all fell to bits. And I think that's what we need to be aware of now. It's about the team and the system rather than the individual players. And I really like that. I'm really up for that.
Will you be saying the same thing if we lose one of our major players in the summer?
Well, it's always sad when good players leave, isn't it? And players that have done well for you. But I will. We've had enough success up to this point, and I've seen enough from Emery to make me believe that it won't make an awful lot of difference. It will just be a different player, and they'll integrate, and the thing will carry on improving, hopefully.
It's really interesting you say that, because we were talking about the same thing last year, and that word trust, that you've seen enough there. You know, we were debating, you'd had enough of some of these players, Andy, it's fair to say, this time last season.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we'd won 1-10 under Steven Gerrard, and I remember we still didn't have 40 points, and I was kind of pulling my hair out. I'd be like, all right, this two number 10 thing isn't working, mate. let's just get to 40 points and then, you know, do whatever you want to do, but let's get to 40 points first. Cause it was, we weren't ever in danger, but it was not comfortable, not being kind of safe when we were winning one in 10 games, which was relegation form. And I remember me, you and Daniel having a long talk on one episode last year, and just saying, and I'm saying in talking about trust, I don't know that I, because you were saying, Andy, we need to get rid of these players. Gerard needs to start, rip it up and start again. And I remember saying to you at the time, I was like, I don't know if I trust this guy to do this. I don't know that I'm sure that he is equipped to do this. I wasn't liking some of the things he was saying and some of the vibes and some of the throwing the players under the bus, the no exclusive culture with all the excuses in the world. But it is interesting that you say that now, Andy, in terms of Unai Emery, and I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of feeling your vibe. I'm smelling what you're cooking here. I do kind of feel like I do trust Emery to make choices, even if they're choices I don't necessarily understand to begin with, that they're going to be in the long-term benefit of Aston Villa. And if we do lose favourites this summer, probably I will feel more comfortable with it than I would have last season.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I think it's about seeing that as actually a positive thing. Because if a player leaves, it's because we're allowing them to leave. And you know, there'll be reasons behind that. Danny Ings is a case in point. Seemed madness, you know, at the time to a lot of people. we've only got one striker.
Remember how
at the
angry
club.
People were about that?
Yeah,
people
were absolutely. Mad. And with good reason in many ways. We sold our top striker. For less than we paid him for, our top goal scorer at the time he was. And we thought, we've only got Watkins now and Duran, who's, you know, totally unproven. You know, it's worked out though, hasn't it? And Emery was obviously happy that Ings wasn't going to be able to cut it really and do what he wanted to do. This will apply to a lot of players. And as time goes on, even players that are on board and are doing well now will fall by the wayside because they run out of steam with the intensity that's required of them. And at that point, you move them on. New players come in with that hunger again and it regenerates that way. I'm not talking about ripping the whole thing up like I was last year. I'm just talking about that steady evolution and making sure that everyone's buying in. And if a big player, if it's Emi Martinez, if it's Tyron Mings, Douglas Luiz, whoever it is, if their heads go and they're not up for it anymore, we move along and we get someone else. Yeah, hopefully it won't, but you know that's the way it has to be, I think, for this to work. Otherwise, it will run out of gas. That's obviously just my opinion. We've seen it happen at Spurs, seen it happen at Leeds. High intensity managers, and it runs out of gas. You've got to turn the squad over. That's my view.
Speaking of turning the squad over, I know this isn't in the notes, and I know that we're trying to be succinct here. So I'm gonna just a couple of questions. If we were Southampton are gone now. I've mentioned James Ward-Prowse already. Leicester, as we speak here on Monday, May 15th, are 2-0 down to Liverpool. So it looks like Dean Smith might record back-to-back relegations, which probably puts him in a very small club of managers that have managed to do that. So that's unfortunate for him. But I don't know about Ward-Prowse. And I think, is it the young lad Lavia is his name or something? The centre-back? But certainly Leicester, they have two or three players I would snap your hand off. Do you think that Villa will go relegation shopping? Because I mean, all the teams that are down there, Southampton already gone. Certainly there's a couple of players there. Leicester, Leeds, Everton, Forest. It's going to be two from those four joining Southampton in the Championship next season. Is there any kind of... are you ready for your trolley dash? Have you got your basket out and your credit card? Would you be looking at any of these players from these teams, Andy, just off the top of your head?
I'm not sure, really. I'm not a fan of signing relegated players because I'm not certain they're in the right place mentally. Unless they're young players that are coming up, you know, and they're even though they've been relegated, they're tasting the big time for the first time. I'm not entirely sure. I think it's quite damaging, particularly at a club like Leicester. who were league champions 7 years ago. I think it's quite a damaging thing, and I wouldn't be rushing. And you're paying a premium as well because they're desperate to get the money in, aren't they? I'm happy with the idea that I've heard, which is, you know, we're going to be shopping in La Liga, and given that, you know, we got Moreno from there for 14 million and he's an absolute world beater, I'm more than happy to go down that route this season. But I think you've got to have a mixture. You've got to be looking in all the markets, haven't you, really? You know, so you don't leave any stone unturned. Either way, I'm excited about the summer. I'm trying to hold off until we know what how we finish.
I'm just, hey, it's just me. I'm looking at the Leicester score and I'm thinking they are struggling and they have some big time players. Certainly, I would snap your hand off for Harvey Barnes. There's others as well, but I was just put you under this. We will have time to cover all this in the when we see who is going down. But at the minute, you're thinking Forest looks safest, but Everton, Leeds, and Leicester to lose two from those three—that's a big thing for the Premier League. There's someone big is going down, and that's just a fact. But anyway, sorry, Andy. Back to Harry Kane.
It's good to speculate. we'll talk about just quickly, really, because we are sort of trying to keep it short and sweet. But Harry Kane,
really good at. Can you tell, listener?
Harry Kane did win the penalty later on. He was apparently fouled by Martinez, and VAR awarded the penalty after it hadn't been given by the ref. He scored, obviously, the scoreline massively flattered Spurs on the day, 2-1. It was much more convincing than that. Just what was your view on this, Craig? Penalty or no penalty for you?
Yeah, it's a penalty. I understand why people are getting their knickers in a twist, because Harry Kane does this. He buys penalties and he buys fouls. This one, put it this way, this one was more of a penalty than the one that Harry Kane won against Matt Cash, where Harry Kane's literally kicked him. Cash has been a bit naive, and Cash has learned from that. I think he gave another one away against Man City, Cash, but he's learned subsequently to be a little bit more canny in these positions. We've also seen Villa give away penalties. I remember Paqueta at West Ham, very, very soft from Bailey. And there's another one where he conceded the penalty where it was really, really, really soft and naive. And so, look, whether you like it or you don't like it, players are going to go down in the penalty area to try and win the football match for their team. I would do it for Aston Villa. I'm sure players have done it for Aston Villa. So I'm not going to be a hypocrite and sit here and you know, when Jack Grealish in particular, who was a master of it, may have embellished some contact to win us a free kick. Unfortunately, it wasn't tend to be in the penalty area. It was to relieve pressure because he was playing in an awful Aston Villa team. But, you know, he did it plenty of times for us where our defence needed a breather. We could, you know, take a breath, get a minute, and he helped us get points. So I'm not going to be a hypocrite and sit here and say that, you know, it's outrageous or anything like that, because I support Villa players when they do it. If I'm going to critique anyone, it's not Harry Kane, because Harry Kane's job is not to be fair and a kind of warrior of light and justice. His job is to win points and penalties and score goals for Spurs, and he did that. My finger here would be pointed at Martinez. I think he got involved in something which was none of his business out there. If you watch the tape back, that's an old reference. If you watch the video back, not use tapes anymore, Craig, then you'll see the Villa defence were actually well positioned. Even if Harry Kane gets to that ball and is able to bring it under control, hits a first-time cross, all the Villa players are where they need to be, and it's going to have to be an unbelievable ball from Harry Kane for us to concede from there. And also, he doesn't have the angle to shoot from. So I think if Martinez minds his own business, stays on his line there, worst case scenario, you know, Harry Kane kind of slides and hits a ball or someone comes across to intercept him. I think Martinez was naive. And if you don't make a full contact on the ball, and I mean a full contact, I don't know if it brushed his, you know, his fingernail or whatever, but there's no question in my mind, Martinez did not make a full contact on that football. You're asking for trouble. So that's what it is for me. Now, obviously, where you do get annoyed is Ollie Watkins was cleaned out in the first half, I think, by Emerson Royale, and it wasn't given as a penalty or even looked at. And also the clip that's been going on social media where Hugo Lloris absolutely wipes out Ollie Watkins in a previous fixture between the two clubs, and Villa don't get the penalty there. That's where people get annoyed with the unequal treatment. Yes, that should have been a penalty, as should have been the challenge on Watkins, I think, in the first half, and as should have the challenge on Watkins in a previous game with Hugo Lloris. But this one for me was a penalty. I don't really understand what people are so annoyed about, other than the unfairness of us not getting penalties in similar situations. I don't know what you thought of it, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I couldn't really see it because I was at the other end of the ground, but...
The Arsene Wenger. Well, I did
see it. But it just looked like Martinez had got the ball, and obviously the ref didn't give it, so I assumed it was a corner and that was it, really. But watching it back, I mean, Kane hangs his leg in, doesn't he, and plays for the contact and goes over. But it's a clumsy challenge. It's a clumsy piece of play, like you say, by Martinez. And, you know, if the roles are reversed, I'm disappointed if we don't get that at the other end. So, absolutely a penalty for me. The issue is whether it was clear and obvious enough to review it. That would be my take on it. But all the nonsense that's been going around about Kane being a cheat and all the rest of it, I'm just not having it. He's just doing, you know, what he does for his team. You know, he's trying to nick a point at the end of the game, and you know, he nearly put his team in a position to do that, which would have been fantastic for them. And at the end of the day, that's all he cares about, isn't it? So, no issue with it. Martinez is in the wrong. You know, it's clumsy. And you could argue whether VAR should have been checking that, whether it was obvious enough to check it. But having done it, it's a penalty. So, but it's just... And again, whether they do that, whether there's a similar threshold for that sort of thing across the game or indeed other games, you know, it's just a bit of a mess at the moment, isn't it? And that's more the problem, I think, with this. But yeah, the penalty, and we held on and got the win, which was absolutely fantastic. We're back in the race. Liverpool away this Saturday at 3:00, the penultimate game of the season, the last away game. Villa remain eighth after Brighton absolutely smashed Arsenal yesterday. 3-0, incredible performance by them. And they look odds on now for sixth place. And it's essentially a shootout between us and Tottenham for the Conference League position. Liverpool's home form has been excellent, similar to Villa's really recently, and they're hunting down fourth place themselves. Klopp will be looking to use his embarrassment of attacking riches to exploit Villa's defensive line. But they've also looked really sloppy and shaky at the back, as you sort of referenced earlier, really. Emery may use the option of Kamara in the midfield, who looks like he's back up to speed from his substitute appearance on Saturday. So there may be a decision also between Buendia and Bailey to play off Watkins at the weekend. How do you expect them to approach this one, and how would you be approaching it, Craig?
I wouldn't be surprised to see Kamara come back in and maybe Buendia drop out, because I think that Emery loves to play Bailey in these games where we're away from home, where we're looking to counterattack for the speed. So a front two of Bailey and Watkins wouldn't surprise me, with Buendia maybe making way for Kamara. But I would also not be surprised to see same again. I mean, we had such a wonderful performance against Tottenham. Again, as you say, that scoreline did really flatter them. Villa really did, should have scored a good number more goals than we did. But anyway, the win's the win. I would think that we have to make sure that we stick to our ideals and our principles. We were very, very unlucky in the game, the home game against Liverpool. We also had a catalogue of chances there. I think we're a much better unit now defensively. to hopefully contain some of Liverpool's attacking players. But we have to, we kind of have to win. I think Brighton, I was talking lyrical, I was waxing lyrical last week after Everton smashed Brighton, thinking we could pip them to the post, but they want to give Arsenal a hiding. So thank you very much for that, Arsenal. And now it looks very difficult for Villa to catch Brighton. I mean, they still have to go to Newcastle on Thursday. So maybe by the time you hear this, that game's already happened. And perhaps we'll have some better news from the Newcastle game. But yeah, it looks like a straight shootout between us and Spurs. And I think we need something from this game, Andy. I think we need a point. And then I think we have to beat Brighton on the last day to make sure of seventh place. Because I think Tottenham are going to get at least one more win and one defeat. But I think we need at least a point. What do you think?
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it? And I think we're more than capable of doing it. Certainly if we put in the sort of performances we have been playing, even the two, or certainly the Man United performance where we lost, it was not a bad performance and we're probably unlucky not to get a point there. Obviously, they're incredibly frightening going forward. You know, they rip everyone to shreds. It's really difficult. And it's just whether our defence and the structure and the defensive unit sort of stands up to it, really. If they get ahead early or get a couple ahead, it could be a long afternoon. But if we can keep it tight and shorten the game as much as possible, we're in with a chance, because Liverpool's defence is not what it was by any stretch. So, yeah, but reasonably confident. You know, I would like to see Kamara come back in, although, albeit how well McGinn played, I think he's just as effective from that right side. He was coming off that right side pretty much anyway for a lot of the game. It was interesting, sort of his starting position, really. But I think he's really good off there. And Kamara came on and just looked silky on Saturday. He looked really, really good. So bring Kamara back in. Keep everything the same. Bailey, I would start Bailey ahead of Buendia and go with that, really. I think, I'm looking forward to it. I said last week that I think it feels like the last three, you could almost treat it as a two-legged semi-final and a final in Europe. If Emery was looking for a comfortable kind of way of approaching it, something he's done before, because it's very much that now. We've won the first leg, we just need to keep it tight in the second leg on Saturday and then go and beat Brighton in the final. And if 7 points isn't enough, then so be it.
I suppose that the good thing that we have as well, yeah, I mean, look, we've already way overachieved. If we don't win another point, We've had a wonderful season and we've done wonderfully well. First top 10 finish in whatever it is since 2011. All that other stuff we've talked about, it's already a win. We already have the cake. Anything on top of this will just be the icing and the cherry and perhaps some whipped cream. But now we're so close, you're greedy and you want more. I suppose the good thing that we have, I don't know if it is a good thing psychologically, I don't know what you think, Andy, is that Tottenham play before us on Saturday. So we are going to know by the time we kick off against Liverpool what Tottenham have done at home to Brentford. So I don't know, is that a good thing if Tottenham lose? If Tottenham lose, the pressure's on to get 3 points. And if Tottenham win, the pressure's on also to get the 3 points. I mean, you kind of have to get something anyway, but what do you think? Is that an advantage for Villa playing second, or would you rather get your result at the game at the way first?
I don't know. I think it'd be more of an advantage if we weren't playing such a good side. I think if we were playing, you know, Crystal Palace or West Ham or someone, I think it would be more of an advantage. Liverpool, you know, they're going for their own prize, aren't they, still? So they'll be looking for a big win. It's such a difficult one. I think it's going to have to be a monumental performance to get anything out of it. If we get anything out of this game, a draw, whatever, it's the performance of the season for me. It's got to be, because they're so good at home, so dangerous at home. And, you know, if the three attackers they pick aren't working, they just take them off and put another three on. It's just ridiculous. It's it's really hard to do anything against them from that perspective. You just hope they have an off day and that our defence stands up to them. We shorten the game and we get a chance and take it. That's what we're hoping for, Craig, I think.
All right. So you can go first this week. What's your prediction? I always go first.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'm going to go 2-2. I think we're going to have to score 2 to get a point. 2-2.
2-1 Villa, Andy. 2-1 Villa.
Wow.
I think
okay.
Unai's going to do it. And I'm backing Watkins to get back amongst the goals.
Yeah, he needs one, doesn't he?
I think he's going to do it. I think it's going to be difficult, but I think that Liverpool are going to leave us enough. They're going to give us even more chances than Tottenham did. I think they leave big gaps. They've got big problems defensively and have done all season. And I think that we can win. The only thing that does scare me is talking about the bias from officials. We're not going to get a lick at Anfield. No. We are not going to get a sniff. If Salah, you know, you talk about Harry Kane, if Mings or Konza so much as breathe on Mo Salah in the wrong way, Liverpool get a penalty. So it's almost going to be against 10 men and that's kind of what it is at Anfield. You know, you can call it corruption or call it whatever you will. You know, away at Old Trafford and away at Anfield, you know you don't get anything. So that's going to be tough. So we're going to have to be really careful, but I think we'll get chances. I think we're going to score for sure. And I think we can contain their attacking threats.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Yeah.
But I love the positivity. And if we do it, that'll be a tremendous step forward, won't it? So, and then it will just be all on the Brighton game. And hopefully they'll be home and hosed by then. We'll see. Thanks for joining me, though, Craig. It's been great going through that. Always good to talk after a win. And thanks to everyone for listening. Remember to, if you like the podcast, if you follow the podcast, give us a like or a follow on wherever you get your podcast from, and you'll get a notification when the podcast is out. Also, check out us on social media under agaslitlamp.com. And if you go into Liverpool, make loads of noise and let's see if we can bring those points home and keep Craig happy for another week. But other than
also
that, we'll
still
be back
looking for a ticket to Brighton, lads and laddesses.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we're
you know, feel
for
free
that.
To hit me up. I need to put that at the top of the show, don't I?
I think possibly half of Birmingham's probably looking for a ticket to that game. But we'll do our best, Craig. We'll do our best for you. But if you're going to Liverpool, enjoy the day, make loads of noise. We'll be back next week to review it all and look ahead to the final game of the season. But until then, stay safe and up the Villa.